Now here's Bill Resnick with Lori Wallach of Global Trade Watch.
Thanks, Tom. Lori Wallach, welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Well, you're enthusiastic. That's good. Lori Wallach is the director and founder of Global Trade Watch. It's a division of Public Citizen. She writes on trade policy, opposes the corporate version of what they call free trade, but which is hardly free, and it's thousands of pages of rules work to the benefit of the corporate elites who have been writing the laws and, of course, injure working people across the world. Global Trade Watch rather supports and proposes fair trade policies and enforceable standards and rules that would benefit the 99% and also, of course, contribute to saving the planet. So, Lori, it's another election season. The presidential primaries are ending. It had to be really fascinating for you, as, of course, was the Obama-Romney battle in 2012, especially this one, the primaries, because trade policy became the major issues for both parties. In fact, all the candidates were forced to stake out positions. Pretty much all of them had to be critical. We'll be talking about the positions of all the major candidates and particularly how fair trade is being presented. But first, Lori, why now? Why did trade policy flare up in the primaries?
I think there are two factors. One is that there are very few policies that are more emblematic of corporate power and control than our so-called trade policy. At the heart of agreements like the Trans-Pacific Partnership is an investor privileges regime that literally elevates individual foreign investors and companies to equal status with entire nation states that have signed an agreement through the investor state dispute resolution system. Any individual investor can sue an entire government as if they were an equal country, but they get to privately enforce this public treaty demanding taxpayer compensation for any government action or policy that they think violates the new investor rights and privileges that the agreement would give them. And this provision, this incredible formalization of corporate power, I think has become, since Senator Elizabeth Warren really started to publicize and popularize it a year ago, an issue that has made much clearer for people that agreements like the TPP aren't about so-called trade. They are a corporate empowerment tool that sets up new rights and privileges for corporations and that limits the ability of people to make the decisions that will affect their lives or governments to regulate in our public interest.
Yeah, Lori, why don't you give us a few examples of how private, mostly corporations, but also individuals have sued governments to stop them from doing things like having a universal health service and many other sort of maneuvers.
Well, these corporate lawsuits, the investor state suits, the system that is the TPP, I mean, examples are, for instance, a toxic waste dump that in Mexico has been shut down by the government.
Lori, talk right into your phone. We're having trouble hearing you.
I'm sorry. Is this better?
Yes.
Hopefully. One example, just for instance, is a state government in Mexico denied a U.S. company the right to reopen a toxic waste dump that had been shut down as polluting the groundwater when a previous owner, a Mexican company, had owned it. But under NAFTA, which has a smaller version of these investor rights, the foreign investors said, well, maybe you can regulate the domestic company, but if we're a NAFTA investor, we have absolute rights as investors. So either you have to let us open this toxic waste dump and pollute, poison the water of the city, or you have to compensate us. And the decisions are made in front of tribunals of three private attorneys. The corporations pay them by the hour. And it's basically a corporate parallel system of injustice where the companies don't have to follow the domestic laws or use the domestic courts, but can hire private attorneys to to, and many of the attorneys rotate between suing governments for the companies and acting as judges, and it's unlimited how much they can make taxpayers pay. So in this instance, the government of Mexico was ordered to pay $14 million to the company that was treated exactly the same as the previous company that was Mexican that owned the toxic waste dump.
Laurie,
another example of Laurie,
talk, right Laurie, please talk right into the phone. You fade out.
Another example that's happening right now is a challenge against Quebec, Canada's moratorium on fracking. They have a moratorium on fracking, and there's an American company that's demanding hundreds of millions of dollars in compensation because the people in this province in Canada have decided there needs to be more scientific examination of what would happen to the water system, to pollution, if fracking continues, particularly under the St. Lawrence River, which is the main water source for the province of Quebec. So these are real cases. Philip Morris right now is suing against tobacco regulation. Chevron has been paid out tens of millions. Occidental Petroleum has been paid out billions, has been ordered in a case of polluting the Amazon to be paid billions. Financial firms are getting paid off after they have attacked financial regulations, water companies. It is a corporate attack regime. And people are getting aware of that. The second thing I think that's happened is more people are aware that the trade agreements never live up to their economic promises. So people in Oregon are constantly being told, Oregon's a winner in trade. We have to have trade agreements. You know who's saying that? That's Intel. That's Nike. They don't make their stuff here anyway. They want to be able to sell it here duty-free after they make it in Vietnam or someplace with horrible labor conditions. But actually, if you look practically, even at the official government study about the TPP, Oregon stands to lose. This official study by the International Trade Commission, which was released 2 weeks ago, shows that for the 17 manufacturing sectors that they examined, that for Oregon is almost 100,000 jobs in Oregon, 100,000 jobs in those sectors, that 16 of the 17 sectors for Oregon would be losers, which means that would be 95,000 jobs at risk in sectors of manufacturing in Oregon, everything from electronics manufacturing to chemicals, all of the high-end manufacturing. And the only winning sector in Oregon for manufacturing is petroleum and coal products. And it's a total of 500 jobs. Well, then you look at agriculture, and the number one Oregon agricultural product, of course, is wheat. And the official government study says that wheat will decline in exports under the TPP, and there'll be more imports. The trade deficit will increase. So for Oregon, practically, the economics being projected by this government study that is always too optimistic. These are the studies that said NAFTA would be great, and there'd be no new trade deficit with China, all proved wrong. So the optimistic study says Oregon's a net loser. And people are living this experience. They are seeing what has happened under the past agreements. They know for themselves, for their neighbors, for their friends, the job loss, the wages, the higher medicine prices, and they've had it. And I think that's what's animating this.
This is Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm talking to Laurie Wallach, a director and founder of Global Trade Watch. We've been discussing why trade policies suddenly become national policies during election season because people have woken up to what's in fact happening to them, the much greater insecurity, the inequality, the decline of wages, the working harder for less. It has lots of course, sources for that decline, including attacking unions and mobility within the United States, the race to the bottom by corporations who are putting pressure on every source of employee income or benefits. Laurie, Obama was very critical of trade policy, for example, in the 2016 run for election. And so, in fact, was Romney, even though he was more supportive. In office, Obama then became a fervent advocate of the TPP and fast track and not permitting a real debates on trade and just pushing it through. How do you explain that?
I think that the time was different in that President Obama felt pressure from the top, from campaign officials looking at the polling to say the right thing, and from some of the organized interests that are Democratic base interests. What's different this time, which is why I actually think, for instance, it is within our ability to end the TPP once and for all, is that the demand is coming from the bottom up. It's not just Democrats, it's Republicans too. Across the country, people have hit what I sometimes call the basta moment. They have just had it. And so instead of seeing it become a partisan issue where Democrats take one position and Republicans take the other, rather, if you want to be a candidate who is viable in this presidential cycle, Democrat or Republican, you need to be saying you will stop the TPP. And so you have, for instance, all three of the main presidential candidates all saying, number one, they oppose the TPP, and number two, they certainly oppose it being voted on in the lame duck session of Congress, which is the current plan. After the election, the least amount of accountability, when members of Congress who've been retired or fired can basically decide to come back and vote for their next corporate job, that is when they want to have the votes, because the votes are not there right now. And some of the members of Congress, actually, who will make the decision are right there in the Portland listening audience area. Congresswoman Bonamici, Congressman Blumenauer, Congressman Schrader. Those are some of the very, very few House Democrats who have not already joined Secretary Clinton and Senator Sanders, the Democratic candidates for president, in saying no way on TPP. They are amongst the very few Democrats who have not come out flat opposed. And when push comes to shove, it's going to be some of the Oregon members who decide whether or not we live with the disaster of TPP. Because if there's a majority in Congress, it doesn't matter if the agreement's signed. If a majority's against, it's not going to happen.
This is your Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO. That was Lori Wallach of Global Trade Watch pointing out the importance of influencing U.S. Congress representatives Blumenauer, Bonamici, and Schrader, all in the close to or in this metropolitan area. You know, we were going to talk about what the various positions of the candidates. One of them, of course, is radically and crazily protectionist in some ways and building walls. Indeed, he still may win. But the interesting positions, at least, are those who want to make some changes in, quote, free trade, and those who would substitute fair trade for free trade. We only have another about, 4 minutes? 2 minutes. Characterize the two positions. Why should we 4 minutes. Why should we support free trade? Why should we support fair trade?
So I think the most important thing for your listeners to understand is that the concept of free trade or trade agreements have been hijacked. So the TPP is no more a trade agreement than I am a giraffe. You can call me a giraffe, but I am not a giraffe. The trade agreement that we would want is one that, number one, only deals with trade. So the TPP is packed with all kinds of special interest provisions. It's like the good name of trade got hijacked and all this other crap got glued in. So imagine a trade agreement, this is in TPP, that has new monopolies and protectionism for the big pharmaceutical companies to raise medicine prices. It's literally language to stop competition that would bring down prices. Or imagine the language that extends copyright that would undermine internet freedom. What the heck is that doing in a trade agreement? Or the language on procurement, government expenditures of our tax dollars that forbid buy local, which of course we need for climate purposes, but also to reinvest our tax dollars at home. The fix, the fair trade fix, is to cut away all of the garbage that has been attached to the trade agreements. Why? Because the process is secret negotiations with corporate trade advisors officially security cleared, seeing the draft text that Congress can't even see, much less the public, and having the say on what the U.S. position is. So 600 advisors, 550 of them corporate, they literally, for TPP, put all this protectionist, special interest, monopolistic stuff under the brand name of free trade. So all that garbage has to be cleared out. No procurement rules, no protectionism for the big content industry for copyright extensions, no protectionism for big pharma and extensions of medicine patents. Get rid of the limits on financial regulation that are in there, the limits on food safety. If you can imagine, there are even limits on labeling. And not just GMOs, everything, but there's terrible GMO language in there. All that baggage needs to be taken off the train. Then we need to fix the trade part. And the biggest fix of the trade part is to actually make sure that competition in the global economy is happening on the basis of a floor of decency. Right now we have competition like at the turn of the century between the U.S. states when there were no federal laws. We have global corporations and globalization, and we have no global rules that are enforceable. So trade agreements should condition the benefits, the tax cuts on trade, on companies meeting the global standards that already are there, so that nation states, basically as sovereigns, have already adopted labor standards under International Labor Organization, multilateral environmental agreements, human rights treaties under the UN. But none of these are strongly enforced. And in fact, if there's a conflict, the trade agreements specifically trump them. So we need to reverse that. We need to make those global human standards a floor upon which every company that seeks to get the benefits of the trade agreements must meet the standards. And then finally, we need rules to stop what's called currency manipulation. Right now, even when a place like Oregon, Eastern Oregon, you guys do great in wheat. You should be able to export some of that wheat. But a lot of countries will basically devalue the price of their currency against the dollar. And then as a result, it gets too expensive to send a U.S. export to that country, even though prices are competitive. It's a manipulation of the exchange rate. Rules in the trade agreements that actually, number one, put a floor of human decency on which competition occurs, and number two, get rid of the cheating.
Laurie, we have to sign off.
Number one, clean out all that extra stuff: the investor special privileges and tribunals, the extensions of the patents. All the garbage goes out. The right trade rules go in, and those are trade agreements that could.
Laurie, we have to sign off. Sorry, let me suggest.
That's it?
Yes, we have to finish. Let me suggest people should go to the website Global Trade Watch. All of those details are there, and there's also a study of Oregon and ways in which people in Oregon can influence the fate of this horrible TPP agreement. Thanks a lot for talking to us today, Laurie Wallach of Global Trade Watch.
Thank you.